Hi everyone, welcome to our event. This event is brought to you by Data Talks Club, which is a community of people who love data. We have weekly events. There's a link to our events. There's a couple of events there. Check it out. Then do not forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And I think it's time I updated the screenshot here because it's much higher. So thanks everyone for subscribing. And if you have not subscribed yet, please do it. Then you will get notified about all our events. And last but not least, we have a great and amazing Slack community where you can hang out with other data enthusiasts. And right now, weirdly, sun is shining right to my face, which is unusual for Berlin, probably because today is cold. Anyways, this week we'll talk about data leadership coaching, inclusive data leadership coaching. And we have a special guest today, Teresa. This is not the first time Teresa is here. We already interviewed her. Was it like 2 years ago?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, quite some time ago. So back then we talked about
jobs, finding data.
Reading job descriptions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a very insightful episode where we talked about how you should read job descriptions and what you can do about that. Check it out. It's in our, if you go to Data Talks Club, there is a podcast session. And if you just look for Teresa, we haven't interviewed that many Teresas, only you, I think. So you'll find this.
We can share the link also.
Yeah, we will definitely do that. So Teresa coaches about leading with empathy, and she has helped hundreds of people to level up their data career. And this is what we will talk about today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the questions for today's interview are prepared by Johanna Bayer. Thanks a lot, Johanna, as always, for your help. So before we start, before we go into our main topic of data leadership coaching, let's start with your background. Can you tell us about your career journey so far? And also maybe you can mention what changed in these 2 years between our last interview and today.
Yeah, my career background. I studied computer science and then I did a PhD in data science very randomly. It wasn't called data science back then when I did it. It was in information retrieval, natural language processing, like long, long ago. Then I worked as a data scientist at Sync, the German LinkedIn. And then I worked at Freenow as almost everything, data scientist, data engineer, product owner, senior data scientist, data science lead.
Full-stack data scientist.
Senior data science lead, everything. And then end of 2020, I needed basically a break from being responsible for product. And I kind of thought I prefer teaching other people to be responsible for products so I can take a step back and then recharge. So I joined Neue Fische, where I first worked as a coach, just teaching other people data science, coaching people to change careers from anything what they had with or without background in data, with or without background in industry. And basically leveling up there or stepping into the data career. Yeah, that was like 2020, so 4 years. Then I took over I built up the team, was kind of like a very ad hoc team before, and then I ended up leading the team. And then at some point, I kind of stopped coaching people, and then I just started just taking care of the team and growing the team. And then we also merged with Spiced, and then the team was huge. And so that's my background. And then last year, I noticed that there's like a kind of a little gap in industry, more like a mindset that was bothering me. A lot of people think, oh, I know exactly how to become a senior data person. I just do a lot of courses and I become a senior data person. And then changing into leadership is just like get the role and then just do it. And I mean, that's also, you see it in senior engineering. In a lot of companies, people are like promoting the next lead to be like the most obvious senior in the team. And then that senior is like, I mean, I've learned successfully stuff before. How hard can this be? Just doing it, learning on the job, you know, and that's like a lot of situations where you think about all sorts of, let's say, not optimal leadership are people thinking just learning on the job is enough and not like taking it seriously. So, and it's not, I don't think it's people's fault. I think it's companies' fault. A lot of companies are not really investing in their employees.
I think I needed something like that when I got promoted from my senior data scientist to lead. Because it's like, okay, now you have these responsibilities that are completely different from what you were doing before. And you're expected to do well in them. So go figure this out and Slack.
Because you've done well before, right? I mean, yeah. How hard can it be?
Except now you don't do anything from what you've been doing before. Like the work is totally different.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, you were a good developer before and you could evaluate what it means to be a good developer. And now you have to work with people and you're like totally like, how do I even know if I'm good at this? Nobody's telling us even that, you know, like, what does it mean to be good at leadership or do it? So, yeah, so I think this is more like a general mindset going on. And some people are thinking, okay, I should take this. So that's something I was writing at some point that, in my opinion, switching into leadership from any kind of engineering or data role is kind of like a career change. And I think if we see it as a career change, then we are investing in it. Like, okay, I'm a new learner. I'm a new person, I get into it. So I started offering then coaching, more like incognito. And then this year, it's more like less incognito. And also providing some trainings.
Like you didn't officially like announce sidekick on LinkedIn or anywhere.
Yeah.
But people were still coming to you for that.
Yeah, I announced that. Yeah, first I did last year, I think I offer some free coaching sessions in exchange for feedback. Kind of to also understand what kind of problems people have. And also, I think I kind of had two targets. So there was like the, well, data leadership people who want to become better leaders. Again, this is a point where I'd like to specify that in my opinion, you don't need a leadership title to want to be a good leader. I think leadership skills can help you in your career. So there comes a point in everybody's career when you switch from somebody tells you everything that you have to do to you kind of figuring out what you have to do. And that's like,
yeah, I have a leadership skill. So like, I remember when I was this in the role of lead data scientist, and then I have a problem and I approach my manager, and what he told me, like, you're lead for a reason. And this reason is you have to figure out this stuff on your own. I can help you. I'm always there. I'm always here to support you. But like, I need a list of ideas from you. Right.
Yeah.
So come up with this list, talk to people, see what they need, and then let's talk again in a week. Right? Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the higher you get in your career, whoever your manager is will not really have so much time to have you on their mind 100%.
Yeah.
And I think at some point, people really high up in their career, like, you know, like VP and whatever, they don't even have one-on-ones anymore. Like there's nobody who knows 100% what you're working on. So in order for someone to really help you 100%, they need to be totally aware of your situation. And then if you just have a one-on-one once a month for half an hour, and otherwise you don't really see your manager that much, that's not enough time. And if you go like that, just say, hey, I have this problem. What should I do? You will just get an, and they go for giving you a, helping you, giving you a solution. That is most likely to be super unoptimal.
Because like they have totally different context. They're busy with other stuff.
Exactly.
And like they don't have time to really go deep into your problem and then give you advice, yeah. Right?
Exactly. And that can happen. I mean, it doesn't have to be that you're high up in your career. It just has to be. You can be in a company where they're bootstrapping everybody. And then you have a manager that is managing 15 people. Everybody knows about the pizza, by the way, death by pizza. Everybody knows about the pizza. Like you should only manage pizza that you can eat. So 7-8 slices and everything more than 7-8 people that you're managing is supposed to be too large to do a good job. Direct reports, I mean. So yeah.
Why you have this death by pizza t-shirt? Oh. Or it's unrelated.
Totally unrelated. I'm organizing this conference in Hamburg, Python Pizza Hamburg.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw this t-shirt was at a music festival in Hamburg, Reeperbahn Festival. It's by an artist from Austria. And I thought, oh, I'm actually running the conference in a couple of weeks. So I bought the t-shirt for the conference. Uh-huh. This is usually what I wear by Python Pizza.
Since you mentioned that, maybe you can briefly talk about mm-hmm. Python Pizza.
Okay, Python Pizza is the best Python conference ever.
Because there is pizza, right?
There is pizza. And there's a big focus on having newcomers giving a talk. All the talks are 10 minutes. And then when you give a 10 minutes talk, you actually force people to just talk about one idea, one topic, and it's very focused. And also you can listen to a 10 minutes talk even if you don't like it because you know it's over in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to sit there
and scroll social.
Exactly. So yeah, so I think the conference, it just happened now in February, also in Prague. And I think the Berlin people are going to bring it back this year to Berlin. Some Berlin scene might know it. And it comes from Napoli, actually, of course. I mean, it does come from Italy. Right? We just imported it. Yes.
Okay. So going back to your idea of you cannot eat too much pizza, 6-7 slices at most. And the same with the team. Like, you cannot manage more than 6-7 people at once, right?
I mean, you can, but well, I mean, you can also eat a very large pizza, right? But then you kind of get sick.
How do you feel after that? Because like every time I eat pizza, like I don't feel that it's enough for me, right? And then I eat it, and then until it's like super too much, right? Just too much. And then like, okay, no, it was too much.
That's the same, yeah. And then the problem is that the next day you will not be able to eat pizza. You're going to be like, oh, I ate enough pizza for the whole month now.
Yeah.
Really, you can manage a lot of people. I mean, that is not impossible, but it's not sustainable. So it's not sustainable for your own personal health, and it's also not going to be like really good. Just like with pizza, right? Like the first three slices are amazing, and then the next slices start to be, okay, I've already eaten. Like that's why it's nice to go with friends to eat pizza, so you can swap slices from their pizza, because it gets boring, the same pizza. It starts feeling like you cannot put as much interest and effort and work in a slice or a person to do a good job for that person.
So do you think we can learn the skills? Like if I'm a senior data scientist and all of a sudden I find myself in this situation where I need to figure out what to do without being told, and I'm expected to actually not being told, but figure things out. Mm-hmm. What's the most effective way of learning this? You mentioned that, okay, like I'm an engineer, I can figure this out as I go, which is what most people probably do. But this is not always the best, the most optimal strategy. Is it still like the only strategy, or we can do it better?
The first step is to acknowledge that this is a completely new thing that you have to learn. Maybe the same mechanisms that you were using before to learn software development are not going to match 100% or data and whatever. So there's the one part, you need to find some courses that are really for this, and just as you like read a book, did some tutorials and so on for other stuff at some point in your career, then this is the same. Be part of some conversations. And because it's important to start having awareness, it's like at first you're not really aware of the new scope of problems that exist. Mm-hmm. Like it's just like you don't even know they exist because you've never had them before. So it's not about always having the solution for everything or knowing how to deal with it, but it's also kind of opening up to this awareness that, okay, this is a different kind. This is a problem that can happen. It has happened to other people. And then when I notice, I know how to identify that the problem is coming and what to do about it. And I think the second thing is to work together with the team and like be transparent with the team that, hey, look, I'm in a new role. It's completely new. And I will need your help in order for us to succeed. And in order to need to get your help, I don't want to do a mistake over and over again and nobody feels safe to tell me about it. And then I end up being like, all bridges are burned and so on. So build up a feedback culture in your team so that people, and that's also, I think that is the first skill to learn in leadership, in my opinion, is to accept feedback without saying, I think you're lying. Uh-huh. I didn't do that.
Like you mentioned courses. And then I remember, like for me, I also recognized that I'm an engineer and this is a totally different thing. Now I have to, instead of doing things myself, like I don't have time to do this anymore. And I still think I'm trying, like I'm saying, okay, I will take this task because this task is interesting. This is complex. This is exactly what I like doing. But because I have so many other things, this task never ends up taking, I never finish it, right? So, and then I have to ask other people to take it over. And then like I realized that there is a problem, and then I find courses. And the courses for me, the courses I took were quite difficult in the way the information is presented there, in the way the information, mm-hmm. like I'm Because like as an engineer, I'm more used to problem solution approach.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem. I go to Google. I just look for the solution and then I apply the solution. And this is how my mind works most of the time. Right? So there's problem, there's solution. But the courses they start talking about psychology, they start talking about like all these things that I have no idea like what they are. All of a sudden this becomes important to me. Like instead of, I don't know, architectural decisions that I'm used to doing as a senior engineer, now I have to think about other things. And like they just are super unusual, natural, unknown. And then I just feel completely lost when I even look at these courses. Was I maybe unlucky with the courses?
Yeah, so I personally, when I stepped into leadership, I got training at work. So there was the company, so FreeNow basically hired a trainer that would train for like a 2-day workshop, all the people that were kind of new to leadership or stepping into leadership. And I think this training, so you see, it's not a course, it's a training. So at first it's more like going towards something that is more like training. But this training was also more like, these are situations and these are frameworks to kind of deal with that situation. How do you notice the situation exists and the framework? And then kind of like exercises to apply it.
Like for example, you need to give feedback, right? Because somebody, I think this is what you mentioned, right? Somebody yeah. is maybe not doing a good job, but you don't want to be super upfront and say like, your work sucks because this can hurt other people. Like you're trying to be direct. You're trying to convey yeah. as much information in the as little time as possible, right? Because this is what engineers like doing. But if you just say like, this sucks, that can hurt other people's feeling, right? So you need to train. You need to learn how to give feedback correctly.
I always like to do the feedback training, to do it as a team training. So not just the lead learns how to give feedback, but the whole team learns. And this feedback training can be done once a year. You know, you always get new people in the team and it's just something takes practice. It's just to bring to people awareness that psychologically speaking, however people give you feedback, it's going to feel uncomfortable. There is not much around that. The only thing that you can learn is how do you learn to react to something that is uncomfortable. To say, okay, I am uncomfortable. I will be uncomfortable. I'm getting feedback now. It will be uncomfortable. And it might be hard to hear. But on the other side, you also want to build like relationships with your employees. And that's why you want to invest in these relationships. And to a point where there's trust, and then you can tell somebody the work that you did was not good does not mean that you are developed. It's just that this particular work that you did. So I think this is something that a lot of people are struggling to get their self-worth from another place than the work that they did. And then you cannot criticize the work without the person getting upset. And that's something that is just something that takes a little bit of work.
I think this applies to every aspect of life. Because I remember I was reading a book about how to, not feedback, but like how to tell your kids about certain things. And then mm-hmm. like one of the ideas there was you never criticize the kid. You criticize the actions. Like, look what you yeah. did. And these are the consequences. It's not because you are a bad kid. It's because this is what you did, right?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise your kid learns that they're always bad. And yeah. then whatever they do, they anyway can't make it better. Yes, but this is not like how we used to, at least older people. We grew up with like a little bit of different kind of, you know, our parents, I don't think they got feedback training in the workplace. And the books were like different back then. So unless you get like intentional about learning how to give feedback, it won't really come natural.
What do you actually do as a coach? One thing you mentioned is you organize mm-hmm. these feedback sessions, team trainings, where the entire team learns how to.
That one I was doing as an employee.
But like, what do you do as a coach?
Well, currently I have a lot of people, I think, coming in that are more struggling with like becoming impactful at work in order to get promoted, to feel impactful, so to say. So I think this is maybe in data is a little bit even more trickier than in engineering itself, because there seems to be like, and I think there still is a little bit of unrealistic expectations of data teams. it's going to deliver value and it's going to be awesome. But everybody forgets that you need to invest in a lot of foundation work, because, you know, the data has to be reliable and daily and in real time or not in real time and so on. And that's like invisible work.
Yeah. So it's about setting wrong KPIs to assess the person. You need to highlight that, right?
And then it's like, it feels like you're not really doing any. It's very hard to say like, oh, I've achieved something, or it's like my work, the work that we're doing is impactful, because you're not always delivering customer-facing products because you're still building foundations and so on, or the velocity is not, the speed with which you're doing things is not as fast as some people want. So I think, so that's kind of like so far. And then also, how to have like this, like training the leadership mindset for work, which is leadership mindset, as I said, is not necessarily that you are a team lead, but you are in roles that require leadership skills. And I think, again, coming back to data, maybe that's like, I'm not sure if you also saw, there are some posts about it, but a lot of people are starting to say that every data scientist has to think to have a product mindset. You can't just like implement your little model and not care about who's using it and what other teams are going to do with it and so on. And everybody starts to be expected to be stakeholder management and be able to collaborate with people from different teams and on their level or on their expectations and so on, and then communicate in timely fashion and so on. This goes into leadership skills, because in the end, you need to invest a lot in communicating. You need to invest a lot into working with other people, and you need to invest in like influencing other people when you actually don't have authority. Because you won't have authority as a, let's say you're a data scientist, you can't tell the front end team what they have to do. You have to convince the front end team how to, let's say, I'm simplifying here. So I think this is also stuff that people are coming with. I am trying to figure out ways how to get better at this.
So I wanted to summarize what you said. So what you do is you help people train their leadership mindset, which is about learning different leadership skills, which you probably need even if you're like a data scientist, senior data scientist, maybe not even a team lead yet, which is communication skills, working with other people, influencing without authority and all these sort of things.
Yeah, understanding like the value, like having a little bit of a strategic mindset about your work. Start to think about, okay, how does my work connect to the company goals? And I'm not even talking about KPIs, because KPIs are going sometimes through a lot of, I mean, some companies have very clear and well-defined KPIs, but sometimes that's not the case. And you are supposed to kind of guesswork what the goal or the strategy or the mission and the vision of the company is. If you want to be impactful and successful, your work kind of, you want to align the work that you do, the projects that you're working on towards that.
And then you, what you said, I think when I asked you what you do, you said, most of the people who find me, they have these sort of problems, like how to get promoted, how to have more impact. But I'm wondering, how do they exactly find you? Are you on some sort of coaching platforms?
No.
To reach out to you directly?
I currently have a website, which is also going to be changing a bit. But basically, I'm posting on LinkedIn and I have a Calendly link that people can book.
Okay.
So I'm also offering, so these are like sometimes coaching is for like longer periods of times. People have like more complex problems. So I'm also offering one-shot coaching for whoever wants to just have a session. And this time it can be like, hey, I have a job interview and I need to prepare for it. Or I've had people come with, I need to switch from one country to another. How do I relocate and adapt what I know, my career in this country to this other country, so that I can get a job in this other country? So it can also just be something that we are discovering, and it's in 1 hour of a little bit in-depth conversation on that. So, or CV review, just that can also just be a 1 hour session.
So if I correctly understood what you said, you regularly post on LinkedIn And then in your profile, there is a link to your Calendly, and people find this link. You probably say that I coach or I consult, and yes, then people find the link to your Calendly where they can book a slot with you and discuss all these problems. And then what you offer is a one-off consultation. It's just 1 hour, or a more regular coaching. Okay. And how did you actually find out that this is the way you want to do it? Like, why Calendly link? Why LinkedIn? Why not partnering with a website that offers coaching? I know there are websites where you can find like some sort of catalog, marketplace of mentors. And then you can say, okay, I need a data leadership mentor.
So most of the websites, so there are two types of websites, the ones that there's with payment, and then there's a lot of them that are for free, which is nice, but the only place I'm offering free coaching at the moment is on Coffee Code Breaks, which is a community for women who are needing mentoring. And there I offer a session per month for free. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, why Calendly? I mean, if you have to manage more than two or three calendars, I think that's kind of like the only way to make. So I have like, for me, if it's not in my calendar, then the thing is not happening. So
basically it's trial and error, right? So you just, you found out eventually that this combination works for you the best way. And
yeah, so basically there's some people who are posting on like, what is the strategy? What are the tools that you need? And there's different levels of tooling. And then there's like the low entry, low payment entry, like when you don't pay so many things for so many things. And then the starter pack of coaching would be Calendly, maybe Zoom or another platform, or Google Meets is still for free. And then you have how much money you want to invest in it. It can get more fancy, more CRM-ish.
Is it the only thing you're doing right now, or you have other activities?
Well, I'm also doing the Pi podcast.
What is that?
It's a podcast that we've started. So it's from the Python Software Foundation, and we want to acknowledge the contribution of women in the Python community. So we are, so women and people from underrepresented groups. So we've started, we have now two episodes out. So one episode goes out per month. And so we are four in this, Marietta, Georgie, and Chuck, and I. And we do two hosts, one guest per podcast. So that's something fun that I'm doing. And otherwise, I'm also partnering with Shades and Contrast with Zamina, where we will offer more like trainings and consultancy gigs, I guess. Shades and Contrast.
What is that?
It's a company that Zamina has launched. She also wants to kind of like bring more responsible AI to the German market, so to say. So it's often training and consultancy.
Is consulting and consulting and training.
And training, yeah. So yeah, sometimes you go to a company, you kind of help them set something up, but then you also want to leave. And for that, you want to help the team be able to work with whatever you help them set up. And then they might need training.
So for you, your main activity with which you earn for a living right now is coaching.
Yeah. I mean, transition. So for me, this year is the year of trying to do that. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is very interesting and motivating. So thanks for sharing that. So when somebody approaches you, you probably have some sort of framework how exactly you're going to help them. How does it usually go?
So I first obviously ask about their background and why they're there. What do they expect to get out of it? And then I think the hardest struggle is just to coach people. So, you know, you have training and coaching. And a lot of people, I think, come to me because I have data background. So then a lot of people then expect training as well. Because when you do coaching, theoretically, you're never supposed to give advice. Like that's like the extreme of coaching, right? Like the, I would just ask you open questions until by the end of the hour, you come up with yourself to the moment. Like, yeah, you know, and then, and I think I kind of go a little bit in the middle because there's also like sometimes advice. There's a book, there's a course, there's, have you tried this? And so that's kind of for the people coming from a data background.
It's more just a general consultation, right? So you can do a bit of coaching, a bit of mentoring.
Yeah. And sometimes you have like CV reviews, sometimes it's also quite, even if you're not looking for a new job, I think it's a very healthy thing to do every now and then, because I think most people living in Germany are, if you compare a CV from someone living in Germany with someone living in the United States, you see the difference, you know, there's so much ownership in, and I did it, I achieved that in a American CV, and in Germany it's like, yeah, we did this together and we built it. And it's very like, let's say, unassuming, right? And we are also kind of really bad, and a lot of us feel very uncomfortable talking about our achievements, because they're like, oh, but that's bragging, right? I mean, and is it? I don't think it's always bragging.
You need to be able to sell yourself, right? And Americans.
Yeah, but also to yourself, you need to be able to brag to yourself. I'm talking about even to ourselves. They're like, oh, I really have achieved that, and I will own it, and I will feel much more confident from just acknowledging that I did that.
So what you're saying is like, we shouldn't feel that this is bragging. It's more like acknowledging that we have done this. Like, it shouldn't feel like bragging, because like, this is the fact that I have accomplished that.
Yeah. Like you in the podcast, right? Uh-huh. And the whole Data Talks Club, like the whole community and the courses and everything, right? Mm-hmm. That's quite a big of an achievement as a side gig, unpaid. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how often you brag about it.
Well, right now it's my main activity. So.
Okay.
Well, when people ask me what I do, I just tell. Does it count as bragging? Maybe a little.
No. But see, this is already like you're being put on the spot. Yeah. And I'm like, it's like.
I did this on purpose.
I did it on purpose. I think there are people that are finding this way more, they feel way more like super confident and like, oh yeah, I totally did that. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they are born like that. It's just a matter of practice. You look in the mirror 100 times a day and you tell yourself, or like, okay, maybe 5 times a day, and you tell yourself, that's what I did. So yeah. And then it's like, yeah. And I think also we don't really do retrospectives with ourselves that often. I mean, I've seen a lot of people on LinkedIn. They did at the end of the year. So January was everybody doing their retrospective and the New Year's resolutions. I decided to do my retrospectives at a random date this year, because I kind of, why New Year's?
So is this something you also recommend your clients to do, the retrospective?
Reflecting on, sometimes maybe you need another person to do it, just to ask the right questions. But yes, reflecting on everything that you learned or achieved in a, let's say, the past year or in the past job. Like starting to put things in writing on a piece of paper, and then it's definitely can help you get like a sense of achievement. Sometimes you feel like, especially if you're in a workplace where, let's say, you don't have from your work, like given goals and so on, and you work for 4 years in the same job, like no change in title and so on. It gets like at some point, or actually the best example is, ask someone to give a talk at a conference, and when they reply with like, but what am I supposed to talk about?
That's what.
Nothing that I do is like really conference level. If that's your answer, then you should definitely retrospect. And I did this course on writing online, Ship 30. And the idea there was like, what do you write about? You know, how do you come up with ideas? And there was like the concept of the 2-year rule. And the 2-year rule is like to write down everything you've learned in the past 2 years, and to understand, to acknowledge the fact that there are people that are 2 years behind you. And then when you want to talk or present or say what you have achieved, is you talk to those people. So you have an audience. That's also at a conference. You are likely to have people that would be 2 years behind or 1 year behind.
But that's such a good piece of advice, because like I find myself regularly in this situation when somebody approaches me and say, hey, we want to invite you to talk at a conference. And then like, okay, I've stopped being individual contributor like 4 years ago. And all I did was like just talking to people as a data science lead. Like, what am I supposed to talk about?
I know. That's the curse of switching from individual contributor to leadership. This is what I was also saying. Like, your goals are not well-defined in your work. And you knew exactly before what your value was and now you don't, then it becomes like you don't talk about it even to yourself, right? Like you're like trying to like, let's not acknowledge the elephant in the room, the fact that I have no idea what I'm doing and I have no idea how to talk about that it has any value to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I led 15 people. Nobody quit while I was there. I mean, but doesn't that happen to everybody? It's like, no, it doesn't. So, and I got good reviews as a manager. Doesn't that happen to everybody? No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. The people under me, they grew in their role. I don't know, within 2 years, 5 people leveled up. Doesn't that happen to everyone? No, it doesn't. You know, it. So there's a lot of...
How is this conference worthy material?
But then you have like different conferences. Uh-huh. You have to go to different conferences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it would be not Pi Data conference where you talk about prediction, putting like your model for fraud detection in production, but it would be like maybe some team lead conference.
You could also talk about Pi Data because like, let's put the model in production, right? But what happens and behind the scenes of putting the model in production? You have to convince the whole company that this model should be in production.
Right. Uh-huh.
You have to convince your team that they have to deliver it, like convince, I mean, mm-hmm. agree and work towards a goal. And then it has to be, you're not doing it yourself, right? Alone. So all of this stuff, like without this kind of work, there would be no model to go in production because first you have, there used to be these conversations before everybody used to say, yeah, from data science, only 10% of the models make it to production. Or I don't know, some random percent that was very small. And that was the problem because like behind every technical model, every technical piece of code that you're writing in a data team, you have like way more work in communicating about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with like open source. So I'm part of the Python Code of Conduct work group. And now I noticed as part of this group, how much communication happens behind every issue and pull request and so on. And that's where like the art of communication.
Community is super distributed. Like people are everywhere in the world, yet yeah. they need to make a decision, right? And like the decision makers are spread around the globe.
Yeah.
But yeah. you need to reach some sort of consensus. Like, do you accept
exactly
pull request or what needs to yeah. happen there?
That's why I think there's also this volunteer burnout that people are saying for open source because it's not just writing code and you have to, you're spending so much energy on talking about writing code. Next time you get invited to give a talk,
mm-hmm.
you say yes and then figure out what you're going to talk about.
We talked about different leadership skills, mm-hmm. and one of them was leading without authority, which is actually. Mm-hmm. True, especially relevant for data people because they don't have influence over the engineers who are supposed to implement something, or maybe over product people, because often case it was in my company like that. We all have different reporting lines. So I have my data, head of data, for product manager, they have head of product, for engineers, they have engineering manager, right? And in such a setup, I need to go to the product manager and convince them that, look, we need to try to get this on the roadmap because this is important. There is no way I can, like, going through my manager is super complex because, like, it will never reach, right? So, like, I need to convince that person in front of me that this is the good idea. And there's a question from Adonis, like, do you have any tips regarding influencing? Like, how do you actually do this when you don't have any authority, especially, which is especially true in case of data folks?
Yeah. So I think one of the cornerstones is learning how to speak different work languages. So like how you talk to other data scientists is going to be different how you talk to product people and how you talk to tech engineers in another team people and how you talk to sales and how you talk to the C-level and so on. And then it's also about listening. So practicing talking different languages and also practicing like this active listening. And with active listening, you start hearing what people actually have as a problem or what they care about, what are their own goals and what are their own perspectives. And then you can organize your message to fit to that. Like, you want to be able to communicate to the other person to the level that they will understand what you are saying. So a lot of the times our problems in communications is that we think communication is just about delivering a message. But actually, communication is about making sure that the other person understood the message the way we intended them to understand it. So that's a little bit more work.
How do I get them to do what I need? That sounds very but I have a project, right? And then I need to get this on the roadmap. Like, how do I do that?
Well, you just have to make sure that they will find whatever you need to be important.
And I do that by active listening, or?
Well, you do that by communicating why that is important, how is important for them. So for this, you need to find out what is important for them, because otherwise you can't link it to something that is important for them. Why should they care? You really, if you don't connect it to why they care about it, why they should care about it. And of course, you can get a lot of people to do whatever you want if you're like best friends with them, which also requires a lot of investment to get to that level. So network, like sort of networking.
Try to summarize what you said. Like, first of all, you need to understand what they care about. Mm-hmm. So then you do that.
That's the active listening.
And then also learning the language they use. And you also need to be friends, right? Not just,
having a relationship. Yeah. And there was another part is like, this was a problem I noticed with data science people. If you've been on a direct track, like very linear career path, then you most likely you are not exposed to how other people in other teams work and what other roles are there in a company to make things work. So it was not just data science, but also software engineers and so on. So I think I also worked in teams where we saw like there is no value behind having a project manager. I mean, we can also decide what we have to do. There is no value behind having a product owner. So while holding this view on the world, you are not going to be able to collaborate well with a product owner and a project manager. The best way to work on this view is find ways to expose yourself to put yourself in their shoes, to understand how do they work, when is it good for them, when is it bad for them, when is it like a risk or not a risk, how do they evaluate something as good or bad, and how would things be in an ideal world. Simple example is like this relationship when a product owner or a product manager goes to the data scientist and ask, how is the project going, like after 1 week? And you're like, what? I need 3 months to give or 2-3 weeks to come up with. And why do you bother me now? And you're like, yeah, but I need, because you know, your outcome is used by another team. So I need to link this and I need to know.
What Adonis wrote, so this is also about empathy then, which I think it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't really. So get away from empathy. There are all sorts of ways to improve your empathy. And I think there's courses for that. But I think the science behind empathy is that people who are they have emotional intelligence, are more successful in their career. So if that's a good reason to get good at it.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned is the key idea how you can do this. You mentioned try putting yourself in the other person's shoes. Like if you try to put yourself in the position of your product manager, then you can try to understand what kind of problems they have to deal with.
Exactly. What the problems they have and what they find annoying, you know, because maybe like you got just often telling them, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? You know, like you don't even know how annoying it is for the other person and they're like polite and then they don't say anything. But if a person is annoyed, then they're most unlikely. They're not really likely to help you out.
There is a funny comment that Teresa's description of the role of a data scientist leader makes me think that this person is similar to a therapist.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're in a cross-functional team setup.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this is an accurate description.
Yeah. I think when companies are saying, okay, we go completely cross-functional and now the lead of the data science team is because every data scientist is in a different team. So we have the data science lead does not actually hold any more responsibility for any kind of product pillar and so on, just for the people. And that is being a therapist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I noticed that we need to finish quite soon, but there's one thing I wanted to ask you. So The topic of today's interview is it's inclusive data leadership coaching.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about data leadership. We talked about coaching.
Yeah.
But we did not talk about inclusive. So what does it mean and how you do this?
If you think about opposite of inclusive being exclusive, it's like you don't really get too far by being exclusive in the workplace.
What does it mean to be exclusive?
Like you don't want to work with other people. You don't want to collaborate with other people. You don't need other people. You don't care about other people. You don't care about their needs. You don't care about how they want to be treated. So that is being exclusive. That like being authoritarian in leadership, that it's also exclusive. You get your work done because I said so. I don't care if you care about it or not. So I don't see any kind of anything positive out of being really exclusive at work. So, and then inclusive comes, I mean, you have diversity and inclusion, so that's also the inclusion from there. But I think it's about figuring out, and it's not like an afternoon of reading online how to do it, but figuring out how other people want to be treated and working with that.
Mm-hmm. So I was not actually correct when I said that we did not talk about this, because we actually...
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Like all this empathy... And trying to put yourself in the shoes of the other person and then understanding why they should care about our problem or what they care about in general. These all are aspects of being inclusive, right?
Yeah. And then on the other side, you also have like, of course, cultural and gender and a team diversity. And then we all know that in product, and if we work on the data science part, we are probably in product or in analytics, it's important to have diverse perspectives when you're building something. Otherwise, you might not have a big overlap with the people you're building for.
Thanks a lot, Teresa, for joining us again. And yeah, thanks everyone too for joining us.
Thank you, Alexei. And then if anybody wants to reach out on LinkedIn or connect and whatnot, do so.
And there is also a link to your Calendly in your...
Yes, I will update it now.
Okay. So if anyone needs a coaching session from Teresa, you will find the link on your LinkedIn profile, right?
Yes.
So thanks again and bye everyone.